Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli, Money, Riches, and Wealth. And it's January 28th, and I'm getting a little feedback in my headphones here. No, I don't know why. Oh, wow. Three mics on at once, and that kind of causes that. Okay. I'll just turn my volume down slightly, and it won't feed back to me anymore. Anyway, interesting with our guest today, interesting market. You know, you get a lot of good news,
right?
A lot of great earnings reports. Apple blows it away. Market's up about 1% at the beginning and ends the day down like a point and a third or a point and a half or something of that. Even the NASDAQ was down. I don't know. Did Apple end up down during the day?
I didn't really look
at the close, but I was kind of shocked because all day long I saw it. It was, you know, flat to up a point, percent. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it closed down. And the reason that our guest today would be great to discuss this with is because he is a historian, a statistician. You know, his knowledge of markets, countries, history, you know, and economics is remarkable. And that's the type of person you want to talk to when you're an investor. If you look at all the great investors in history, John Templeton or Warren Buffett or Jim Rogers or whoever you talk about, they were all well-versed in statistics and well-versed in history.
So tell us
who we're talking to tonight.
Yeah, well, we've got back in the studio today, Niall O'Malley, and Niall's a portfolio manager.
And Sean said today he's the only O'Malley we'd want to talk to.
Yeah, there you go.
But go ahead. I'm sorry. Sorry to interrupt.
That's okay. Well, you know.
That was Sean's line, not mine.
That was Sean. One Irishman to another, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Go ahead.
So he's a portfolio manager. Runs the Blue Point Investment Management. And we've had him on before, and he's been involved with the CFA Society here in Baltimore. And as you said, has great, great knowledge of the history of markets.
Right. And, you know, I think we asked him the last time if Blue Point had to do with crabs, and he told us no.
That's right.
I think.
Okay.
Is that right?
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that later. You know, maybe you could explain Blue Point again, because I don't remember the history. I apologize. But anyway, now, you know, since I brought it up to begin with, what is your take of, get pretty good news. Market doesn't seem to like it, though, at the end of the day. What do you think's going on lately? And commodity prices are collapsing, which is part of the things we were going to talk about anyway. So what do you think's going on?
Well, the market is in a period of reset, and it's gone. It's had an enormously long run, and it's looking to find its legs for the next element, but it's not finding what it would hope for. And specifically, you have currency headwinds. You have revenue growth from company to company. It depends on their situation. But you have a very real reset with energy, and that's coming to bear as well in a number of S&P 500 earnings companies. And so we're in a period where we're going to be kind of muddy, choppy waters, and at the same time, probably not a lot of upward momentum for a while.
Huh. So when you say reset, what do you mean by reset? Do you think the market's going to do a full 10% correction, or do you think the market is headed for a bear market for a period of time?
Well, there's a rotation that's occurring right now, and the rotation has been very powerful within the energy space. You can look back to history, and you can look at China's enormous growth, and it stopped pushing commodity prices in 2011. We've had a lot of softness since then, whether you look at copper, whether you look at iron ore, whether you look at more recently oil. And, as world demand ebbs for these products and people continue to be able to produce them, the prices are coming down. It does spill over into companies such as Caterpillar. It was interesting today. You know, Boeing had very positive numbers, but it didn't really talk about the fact that you know, if you look at some of the currency changes, you know, their aircraft became 15 to 20% more expensive.
Huh. For other countries.
Relative to Airbus, yes.
Right, to other countries and so forth. So, you know, there's always two sides to a market. So you've got these commodity markets are collapsing. Energy, you know, oil is down 60%, I believe, from, you know, let's just say 60% from about a year ago's high of $100 a barrel. And it's down to 44 now. So it's about a 60% drop. Copper is down over 50%. Iron ore is down way over 50%. You know, so there's two sides. You either have waning demand or you have oversupply. Which is happening, or do you have both? You have oversupply and waning demand.
You have both.
Really?
And oil is a very unusual item because it was accelerated by Saudi Arabia. And their situation is unique. They're on the north, they have an enormous border with Iraq. And instead of, you know, watching issues with ISIS on the TV, it's been in their backyard and it's been in their country and on their border. And then to the south, you have Yemen that's imploding. And so to them, politically, they are very, very threatened. And so I think in the first order, they are defending the kingdom by trying to undermine the people that are challenging them. One of the ways that they can do this is with oil. A second derivative, I think, is flushing out high-cost producers in the United States. They have very, very effectively used their million barrels of swing production to push the price down. And now we have an unusual environment where, you know, if you're in the exploration and drilling area, you know, your only way to receive cash is to produce oil. And so you have enormous supply coming to market as they seek to get that fundamental item that they need, which is cash, which keeps their businesses alive in a very capital-intensive business. So there's a dramatic flush out. And then in iron ore and in copper, it's not as dramatic, but it's the changes are actually similar.
Do you have a question, Tom? You look like you had a question there. But anyway, I got a question.
Uh-huh.
So you get this price of oil collapsing, and you've got a lot of unstable countries that are dependent upon the price of oil. You've got Venezuela, but even more threatening, you got Iran and you got Russia,
mm-hmm.
and so forth. And now all of a sudden, what they were collecting in revenue has been halved. Or
mm-hmm.
more, because
mm-hmm.
they were actually dealing on the Brent, and the Brent oil was $120 a barrel, and now it's 45 or 46 or something mm-hmm. like that. So do you see that as a concern?
It's interesting that it's actually playing out against bad actors. Russia and Putin would be at the head of that class, but also you have Syria and Iran in that class and Venezuela, and so that's a fundamental challenge for them. But, you know, the pricing power has shifted from the producer to the consumer, and the consumer is realizing a huge benefit because two-thirds of the world's developed economies are consumers. You know, Europe doesn't have a Texas. The closest thing it has is the North Sea production. You know, Norway is not part of the European Union. They are net beneficiaries. China's a net beneficiary. The United States is a net beneficiary, but there is a negative offset with oil and gas production within the country that's high cost. You know, Canada's a huge negative because of their high cost. So there's pluses and minuses, but the pluses are actually solidly two-thirds in the consumer side.
All right, so why don't we take that as a pause, and what we're going to do when we come back is then go into what do you think somebody ought to be doing in this low interest rate environment, and it doesn't seem like the Fed is going to raise interest rates anytime soon, but we'll see. We'll talk about that with you in a second. Right now we're going to Nick Rehak and Traffic. We'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
See, I remember what a blue point was now. It had something to do with the horizon and seeing something in the horizon. Is that right?
It's similar. You actually get to step back a little bit farther, and the idea is to be global in orientation.
Right. But then didn't it have something to do with sailing and the horizon?
I think you're thinking about the red flash, but that's a bit of a mystery. Or the green flash, excuse me.
I was close. I'm working on it now. Come on, work with me here, buddy. Anyway, so we were reading an article today from Jeffrey Gundlach, and, you know, he's Double Line, and everybody, you know, they always have a new guru that's always giving you his thoughts, and he was fairly accurate 1 year, so now he's always accurate every year. And his theory is that we're headed into deflation.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, everything's, you know, and deflation tends not to be good for stock markets. At least that's the history. That doesn't mean it won't be good, but the historical norm for Japan, down 70% during a period of deflation. The United States had a period of bad deflation, which we had a 90% drop in our market. Good luck saying we're headed to deflation. What do you think? What are your thoughts?
I think there's good deflation and there's bad deflation. I think good deflation is when you have the benefit going to the consumer. You know, let's step back and look at the period before this, which was the printing of money, and you know the benefit there went to the holders of assets. And in this case, the benefit is skewed towards lower income and middle income, simply because that's a bigger percentage of what they spend on a weekly basis. And it's so I look at it as a positive. Also look at it in terms of who spends money in the economy. Over 70% of the dollars spent are spent by the consumer. If you're in a low-wage environment where you don't have wage growth and you can give the consumer some discretionary income, that's a positive because more than two-thirds of the spending is generated by the consumer.
Well, in the other two situations, in the United States deflation of the 30s and in Japan's deflation of the 70s, most of that was caused by money supply growth. There wasn't any, really. In the United States, we had horrible. We lost 30% of our money supply during that period of time. And I believe in Japan, if they grew 1% money supply growth over the last 20 years, that would be, like, significant. And I don't think they had it until just recently. Is that true?
I can't quote those numbers. I can say that we're in a period that's fairly unprecedented in terms of the central banks setting up these depositories and purchasing securities, namely U.S. Treasuries and mortgage-backed securities in the United States. And then the banks having this extra cash, and the idea is that they'll turn around and then lend that. A lot of that extra cash finds its way into the market. It is unprecedented. But I think when you look at deflation, you need to look at its sources and its benefits. And if you look at, you know, the cost of commodities and you take out oil, we were actually flat last year from January to December. So, yes, there was a huge change in the price of oil. But in U.S. CPI, transportation is 14% of consumer expenditures. So you still have an enormous element outside of that 86% that's untouched.
You're getting on my soapbox here about, you know, inflation. How do we measure it? You know, deflation. You know, there's the CPI. The Fed uses the PCE when they look at things, the personal consumption expenditures. And, you know, and I continue to say everybody's got different, you know, inflation numbers. I mean, we've seen, obviously, the de facto tax cut here of, you know, lower prices at the pump. And we were joking about it this morning. We're down to $1.99, and our wives are all excited about that. But, you know, we've also seen the Unaffordable Care Act, you know, hit people in the pocket. And I can tell you that the impact on me was a lot more than any money I'm saving at the pump. Net. So, I mean, how do you handle that and, you know, the government numbers versus what's really happening in the economy?
Well, I look at it in terms of, you know, what expenditures are being positively affected. Food, about 7 to 8% of average expenditures. Housing is by far the biggest, around 34% of average expenditures.
But so, we don't buy a new house every day or, you know, refinance every day.
Well, refinance applications were up almost 50% in the first part of this year already. And that's a positive because that creates cash for people. You also have, outside of beef, you have negative trends in commodity prices. So that's a positive for people. Healthcare is a real issue. And there's not an easy answer for that because you need to basically create incentives in the system that go beyond merging everything together. Right now, we've created a bigger risk pool to provide insurance through, but we have not created outcomes that incentivize providers and patients to better outcomes.
Hmm. So would you say that the lower interest rates we're experiencing in the world is because of oversupply of money available, oversupply of money buying? Central banks now own a huge amount of the debt of the respective country or region that they're a part of. Is that part of the reason why we're headed into these low, low interest rates?
Well, I think there's you step back and look at what are the drivers. So, you know, what are we basing our interest rates on? Our benchmark is the U.S. Treasury. Who's been buying a lot of treasuries? Who has a $4 trillion balance sheet, the Federal Reserve? Who has created a fundamental lack of supply? And so, you know, if you pay up for something in the fixed income market, that means you get a lower yield. So the more demand there is, it's pushing rates down. And then you also have this risk aversion because we've had very disturbing developments in the Middle East and in Ukraine and other places. You have this risk aversion trade where people come in from outside the United States and buy treasuries. So it's enormous demand. It's pushing the rates down. It's not going to be like this forever, but I see it as a net positive to the market because you're creating a cheaper cost of capital. You're allowing refinancing. You can make it, you can merge a company now where both the acquirer goes up and the acquiree, because the cost of financing and typically the earnings are accretive.
Hmm. So do you have a risk because of the manipulation that these central banks are doing that you kind of are, like any time you manipulate something, you have a situation where should rates really be here if they weren't doing what they were doing?
I don't think rates should be here. I personally would like to see them go higher. Because it creates a distortion in the market, and what happens is that, you know, if you have incentives for people just to seek out yield, and people have no restraints for that, that's what led to Alt-A, that's what led to subprime, because we didn't have enough rate in the market. Mm-hmm. People went to lower quality lenders, and it's basically an incentive for people to do stupid things.
Well, that's what you're talking about is the thing that scares me the most, is that you have a lot of mom and pops who were typically CD investors who have now flipped to all kinds of investments through investment advisors that they have no idea what risk they're really taking, but they have no choice, they think. Do you agree?
Well, and you look at the utilities aspect of the S&P 500. Hmm. Last year, it appreciated over 28%. But, you know, realistically, you're looking at maybe 3-4% earnings growth within a utility. So is there a disconnect between, if you round up almost 29% appreciation and buying something that's growing at 3-4%? I would say yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, Niall, you have to wait, and we got to take another pause because that's what we do. And we got to go to Nick Rehack and traffic, and then we're going to be right back second half of the show, and we'll talk about some more things, what investors can do. Take it away, Nick.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Niall O'Malley, the only O'Malley we'd want to talk to.
That's right.
In the state of Maryland right now. Niall's with Blue Point Investment Management, and he's a historian and a statistician of markets and countries and history and so forth, and always fascinating to talk to and get his viewpoint on what he sees going on. So we have these commodity prices collapsing, and as far as we can tell, Niall, the price of these commodities, many of them are trading way below the cost of production. Something's got to give. You know, you're not investing in the future. You're not continuing to drill or look for new resources when you're doing that kind of stuff. Something's got to give. Companies got to go bankrupt. Countries got to get incredibly unstable. What do you think's the next? What do you think it's going to happen with these commodities?
I think that perhaps the one that people pay the most attention to and can observe at the gas pump is oil and gas, and that's an important one I think, unfortunately, it's not finished with its downward run. Specifically, we're in a period where, you know, if you can produce any incremental oil that's a source of revenue, these companies are becoming desperate for revenue, and in that desperation, they're producing everything that they can. So you're going to have a period where the people run out of oxygen, per se. And as companies run out of oxygen, you're going to see a number of mergers. It's a deep hit. It's going to be very unfortunate for companies involved in exploration and drilling. But I think the production end is going to continue. It creates opportunities for investment. Realize that, you know, it's going to be a bumpy road, but as some companies leave the space, that's going to create market share opportunities as they declare bankruptcy or absorbed by other companies. And, you know, there's opportunities in production, you know, with regards to the steel and copper. That's a little bit more dependent on China, and that's a little harder to prognosticate. But there's definitely opportunities, I think, on the production side with good companies.
So what is an investor to do? They're getting low interest rate on their money, especially in safe money of any sort. They're getting low interest rates. The stock markets are jittery, and the international markets might go up, but you're mm-hmm. losing so much in currency. The mm-hmm. dollar has been so strong. To a U.S. investor, they could have made 20% on a European or Japanese stock market last year, but then lost 5% overall because of a 25% drop in the currency. So what's an investor to do?
Well, instead of the looking at opportunities in the United States, it's worthwhile to look at opportunities outside the United States and also look at companies that will benefit from what's going on with regards to fuel. A simple one is the cruise line companies. How do you get to a cruise line? Well, there are some regional ports, but due to the Jones Act, there's not that much. Most of the cruise activity occurs out of Florida. So how do you get to Florida? Will you take a flight? What is a core driver of cost in a flight? Fuel cost. When you get on a boat, what is the cost of running the ship? Will they have to propel the ship, and they have to create energy on the ship? Amazingly, if you look at some of these cruise companies, their payroll percentage of each dollar earned is the same, 12 to 13%, as their fuel cost. Well, they're going to get, you know, consumers that have more discretionary income. It typically is not an oil driller that goes on a cruise. So, yes, there's going to be negative impacts in the oil patch, but the consumers that have the income to take the trip can book an airline ticket at a lower price over time to the cruise destination. The ship then runs at a cheaper cost. So you can amplify the changes in the economy, and then you have more demand because consumers have more discretionary income.
So you're talking about Southwest Airlines?
No.
Well, they get
Southwest is already the number one performing stock, so they're priced in in the Standard & Poor's 500.
So what about foreign markets? What about China?
China is a very difficult one to prognosticate. It's going through a change where they're flushing out corruption to consolidate power. Many of the actions are actually very similar to what Vladimir Putin has done in Russia in terms of consolidating power. That can have negative implications, and it makes a challenging operating environment. They are becoming more of a consumer economy. That was certainly validated by Apple's earnings with the 70% growth in China. I think China is a very interesting story. I think most of the opportunities are on the consumer side. And, you know, if you look at the consumer side, the people who benefit the most are the States, Europe, China are some of the big names. What do the consumers use there? It could be an iPhone. It could be a trip. It could be transit. But there's other airlines outside of Southwest that stand to benefit as well.
Yeah, so, you know, as you're looking at all of these things, where do you see the best opportunities for investors right now? I'm assuming you're going to point to the equity markets, but where? You know.
Well, I focus with Blue Point, which focuses on separate account management. I focus on the equity markets, And, you know, we'd also look at broken fixed income issues that have fallen out of bed because of downgrades. But right now, because of the low interest rate environment, everything basically trades at a premium. So my comments will be focused on the equity markets. And, you know, one of the benefits of the equity markets is, you know, you can print paper, but you can't print real assets. We are working on 3D printing for commercial production. But it's not there yet. It's still transitioning from the lab to the production floor. But you know, technology adoption, you know, the areas that I've been looking at actively are, you know, things that are consumer facing. We had very extraordinary earnings today. You know, almost a 49% revenue growth from Facebook. You know, it's a channel in which to market to people, and you know, it's amazing. They've started their own search engine. They don't have a direct competitor in the or a direct option with regards to travel, but they already know what your favorite destinations are from what you've indicated on the page, and I could see that as a natural progression that you could have direct competition as they basically monetize this information that they've gathered.
Now, would you classify yourself as a growth investor, value investor, momentum investor, or what? Do you have a classification?
Two-thirds growth and one-third value. So I do focus on growth companies.
Growth at a price, I guess they call it.
Well, growth at a reasonable price. So I avoid highly overstoried stocks that have incredibly high valuations, and I look for verification of the business model. But I also look at turnaround companies. So, you know, companies in the energy space are functionally a turnaround company because they're deeply challenged. But at the end of the day, this is a carbon-based economy, you know, that's not going away.
Do you think that alternative energies are getting competitive with fossil fuels now?
I think that they're, you know, I look at alternative energy is kind of like fingers on your hand. So, you know, you have solar, you have wind, you have hydro, you have oil, you have natural gas. They're all part of the inputs that are used to power our economy and heat our homes and cook our food. But at the same time, you know, I wouldn't say one in particular is an absolute. You know, they work as a complement, and we try to figure out the best mix of them for both the environment and the economy.
Well, and you talk about, you know, the alternatives, and, you know, I harken back to the 80s when there were gas lines and we were all panicking about, you know, the price of oil and it had gone through the roof. Now, we just came off of, you know, $4 a gallon gas. Now we're down to $2 a gallon gas. But when we were $4 a gallon, you know, for gas, heating oil and or, you know, gas at the pump, everybody was getting solar and everybody was pushing all these things. Now that it's down, you know, I think to Drew's point is, will alternative energies like solar, are they competitive enough from a pricing perspective? Is the technology finally caught up? I mean, I had solar panels on my house in the 80s, and that didn't work too well. But the solar panels now are supposed to be pretty good and gotten better. But, you know, what's happening with the pricing and the value here? Or, you know, and what about the environmental side of the equation? Is there so much political pressure that fossil fuels are not going to be able to have the rebound that they've had in the past?
It's clearly going to have a step back from fuel efficiency simply because even if it's mandated, you know, we have higher MPG mandated by the CAFE standards.
Was it 54.5 by what, 2025 or 27, yeah.
But, you know, you can put all the little cars in a showroom, but they're buying the F-150s. So, you know, it's really where the point of sale is happening in the showroom, not what's in the showroom. And, you know, the point of sale is on the higher gas use cars and vehicles. And so that's going to impact fuel efficiency. We'll step back. You know, you don't find a solar investment or investment in wind energy without a tax credit. So, you know, are they viable on their own? No. But, you know, are they important to factor in and develop so that we can wean ourselves of this dependency over time? Yes.
Hold on. We got to take one more pause, and then we're going to be right back, finish up with our show. Always runs quicker than you would ever anticipate. But right now, we got to go to Mark Thibodeau with the weather. Take it away, Mark.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Niall O'Malley, and he is the principal of Blue Point Investment Management, a local Baltimore-based investment management firm. And I think you've only, you've been in business now about 5-6 years?
Over 8.
Has it been that long?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I remember when you told me that you were going out on your own.
I know, it's
been
scary.
That long.
Scary.
That's a fantastic.
You have a long memory.
I do have a long memory, and I also know that you're very active in the Baltimore CFA Society. And what's your title right now? Are you?
I serve on the program committee, and I also serve as co-editor of the Baltimore Business Review. And we have an exciting development coming up next week at the Center Club, and it's something that's open to the public. And if you communicate with our website, there's a link there to reach out and register. But we're going to have Jim Paulson with Wells Fargo come in and talk about, you know, basically stock market.
He's the president.
Oh, no, he runs their wealth management company.
Ah, that's what I've heard.
And basically, you know, looking at the vulnerabilities of the stock market. And we're also going to be launching the 2015 Baltimore Business Review that was just literally, it smells new. It is new because it was printed last week. It's a hard copy. It's a 52-page compilation of basically best ideas for the region from society members and contributors, and then also from Towson University, the College of Business and Economics. It's a joint venture. There's no third-party advertising, and it's something that can be accessed on the web via www.baltimorebusinessreview.org. And it's something that really promotes local companies and points out local strengths.
Now, you say you're doing this, and it's open to the public at the Center Club, downtown
Correct.
Baltimore?
Correct.
Now, it's got to be limited. So
it is limited.
You can only fit so many people in that place.
Yeah, well, I actually asked for a count before coming in today. I know our max is about just shy of 200, so we're getting up there, but I'm not sure where it is at this point.
So what do our listeners who want to get their reservation in immediately, what would they do?
Just go Google the Baltimore CFA Society. It's comprised of over...
CFA, Charlie Frank Apple.
Yep.
CFA.
Chartered Financial Analysts Society of Baltimore. And,
I like Charlie Frank Apple.
And there's a website there, and there's a link. Dial it in for Info Baltimore, and we can give you the information. It's basically an opportunity to network. We have over 600 members, and it's also an opportunity to learn and to showcase the Baltimore Business Review. Its official launch next Wednesday.
So that's just Google the Baltimore CFA Society,
mm-hmm.
and then Info Baltimore. Search
There's a link on it for further information, and it says info at the society address. And requests can be responded to through that.
So I'm looking in this Baltimore Business Review, and the article catches my eye. It says, Maryland, a 3D printing hub.
Mm-hmm.
What's that all about? Because I think 3D printing is a really cool concept, and I think it's going to be exciting in the future.
Well, it is one of the things that Baltimore is developing, and there are a number of venues in which this is being developed, whether it be through, the University of Baltimore, whether it be through the University of Maryland and Maryland Department of Economic Development. There's a great deal of interest, the Able Foundation, there's a great deal of interest in to sponsor innovative companies. And one of the areas where sponsorship has been received is 3D printing. And it's a really interesting space because it's one where you can accelerate ideas and you can accelerate the application of ideas, and you can also make structures that weren't otherwise possible. And there's direct applications in manufacturing, and there's also direct applications in medicine.
So how do our listeners get this booklet? Because this is pretty cool.
Well, the booklet will be available for free on Wednesday at the Center Club event for Jim Paulson. And it's the registration starts at noon, and the event will start at 12:30. And it's one where, you know, we have monthly events, and we basically try to share best ideas and use the resources that, you know, make Baltimore and a regional center and promote it.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, this what year is this? Like the fourth year, maybe?
This is the sixth year.
Sixth year. So, yeah, we're short on our estimates here. But there's an article by you in here about ETFs, and it's healthcare, 3D. You know, I know there's a company in Jarrettsville, I think it is, Lennox Laser, and they use a 3D printer there to produce some of the things that they do. So it's neat, and it's a great highlight for the area.
Mm-hmm. We only have about a minute or so to go. You want to tell anybody about a Maryland-based company that you think's exciting to invest for an investor?
I think that a solid Maryland-based company that is challenged and is based in Frederick. It's U.S. Silica, and I think it's one that you would need to do a lot of homework with because there's risk and there's no guarantees. But it is a local story. It is one that's involved in production of silica sands, that one-third of their business is associated with chemicals and industrial uses, and two-thirds is associated with oil and gas. And I think at the end of the day, people will continue to produce, which means there's a fairly decent outlook for demand. The company has been badly mauled by this market. But, you know, the question is, you know, what do people need on a go-forward basis? And, you know, I think it's a company that has a fairly solid market position and is one that's worth considering. But do bear in mind that there is quite a bit of risk with this company and the stock chart.
And your portfolios hold this security?
Yes.
Okay. So that's cool, you know, because, you know, you said earlier you look at two different things. You're like growth investor, but you also like challenged companies that you feel are down and out in price. But you have reason to believe that they're going to survive, and when they survive, you know, sooner or later they're going to be off to the races.
Yeah,
again.
You want to look at the financial condition of the company. Does it have a dividend? Does it have credit facilities? You know, is it generating cash? These are important things to consider. But yes, you want companies that provide solutions going forward.
I only have about 10 seconds. Tell people how they get in touch with you.
I'm based out of Baltimore. We have a separate website, Blue Point Investment Management, www.bluepointim.us. And, you know, look forward to speaking with people and engage in presentations both here and outside the city. Just finished one in Pittsburgh.
All right. Now, O'Malley, Blue Point Investment Management. Look them up online. And I really appreciate you being here. This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.